The San Francisco Experience Podcast, brought to you by Jim Herlihy, independent commentary from a Silicon Valley perspective for a global audience, featuring newsmakers, thought leaders, and authors. Season 25, Episode 6, Looking at Mexico, Mexico Looks Back, talking with author-photographer Janet Sternberg.
I'm delighted to be talking again with you, Jim. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Janet. In her latest collection of photographs, author-photographer Janet Sternberg looks back at the land that inspired her love of photography, Mexico. She shows us Mexico using her everyday cameras, like her iPhone or a disposable, to create a poetic image of the nation's rich culture. Her photography has been exhibited in solo shows in New York, Los Angeles, Berlin, Milan, Munich, Mexico, and Korea. Her literary career includes the classic two volumes, The Writer and Her Work, Phantom Limb, and White Matter. After relocating to San Miguel de Allende, Mexico, in 2022, she met Jose Alberto Romero Romano, a physical therapist. Janet and Alberto share their stories of Mexican culture captured in her photography. The book is a collection of 90 photographs of people, places, and objects taken over a two-year span through the lens of Janet's cameras, enhanced by text and commentary by her and Alberto. She joins us from her home in San Miguel de Allende. Once again, Janet, thanks for joining us.
A pleasure.
Janet, 2 years ago, you shared your collection of photographs about Los Angeles entitled I've Been Walking. What inspired you to relocate to Mexico?
Perfect segue, thank you, because I've Been Walking was a book about the empty streets of Los Angeles during COVID. And after that book, I did a whole lot of very good things, as in shows and galleries, talking at cultural institutions. But somewhere along the line, Los Angeles started to wear on me. Now, I have to tell you that Los Angeles, very, very good to me. Cities can be good to people, mm-hmm. and I was there for 30 years. But, you know, you can break up with a city the way you break up with a boyfriend or a girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And I felt that was happening to me as I was driving to these various events where I'd be talking or whatever, across 8 lines of traffic with glaring sun coming off the roof. And so we, my husband and I, came here for our Here Mexico, our annual vacation. I'm going to pause and tell you that we have owned a house in Mexico for 28 years, the house we now are in. Uh-huh. This time we had our return ticket in hand, and COVID was spiking again, et cetera, et cetera. Suddenly, I thought, I go back. We have a little house we love here. It's 150 years old with the old stone on the walls and the floor. We have many years of knowing people. Maybe life could be different, and it has been.
Very enticing, actually. I lived in Mexico myself for almost 3 years, so I can share that love of Mexico with you. Well, Janet, the collection of photographs in Looking at Mexico, Mexico Looks Back, is a rich body of work about many aspects of Mexican culture and its people. You and Alberto share your impressions and interpretations. How did the book come together?
It came together in stages. The first year that we were living here, I was enchanted with Mexico all over again. I just walked everywhere. I looked at everything. I've taken photographs of Mexico for many years and actually started taking photographs here, but it was falling in love all over again. When I looked at the photographs, and I am very tough on myself, I discarded a lot of them, anything that was merely documentary or merely folkloric or any of that kind of thing. I looked, I said, I have a book, but how can I make a book that isn't only a gringa's way of looking at Mexico? I just didn't want to do that. You know, too many foreigners go someplace and they think of it as my Mexico. It's not my Mexico. However, we now move into stage two, and that is when I got very lucky. I met a physical therapist. I met him in the context of a bad back. Mm-hmm. And on the walls of my house, I had push-pinned a number of 8.5 by 11, you know, just inkjet. No, I think it's laser photographs, doesn't matter. The group of photographs I was thinking about. And he looked at them, and we got along well. And he started talking about this photograph or that. And I felt that I was in the presence of a man who had an extraordinary acute sensitivity to the visual world. He just was moved. He got things that he saw things I didn't see, but he also had a sensitivity to the way in which an image triggers personal memory and ideas about Mexico. So stage two was I proposed to my publisher based in Berlin a book. They'd already said yes to the images, but that would have commentary with Alberto, his text, and we took a big risk on one another. My risk was, will this work out? I mean, I don't know. And his risk was, well, maybe she's just some flake here who doesn't... In any case, we did it, and we met every day for about a month. I'd put together a packet of images. I'd ask him to look at one. I'd already chosen what was for the book and see, you know, is this saying anything to you? And invariably, he found some that did. I took down his words. Then we began a round that went on for actually some months of my working with his texts and his words. That's what's in the book, his words. However, I chose to cut things and shape things. My first vocation is poetry, and I wanted it to have the concision. And then I'd show it to him. And is this okay? Are there words you want to change? So this went on and on as I was sequencing the book. And I think that's probably enough of a description of how it came about, other than to say it was a very rich experience. I learned a lot, and I'd never done a collaboration before. So it was thrilling.
It sounds almost like serendipity with a good sense of a good match. Two kindred spirits matched.
Yes, and across the borders, across everything, different experiences, we did find a way of finding differences and commonalities that spoke to a much larger story of what it is to live here, to be here, to cross borders. And every time I knew he was coming, I'd go down to the local bakery, I'd get his favorite pastry, I'd put on coffee, and we would just enjoy one another.
Well, Janet, of course, we're talking about this beautifully arranged book with 90 great photographs. And of course, we're only going to highlight just a small number of them, maybe 5 or 6. Can we move to the very first one on page 20? Explain to us what that image is, because I think for many viewers, of course, we're going to have to explain this to our listeners. But for someone who would see this photograph, they wouldn't know what it was, let alone a listener. So could you tell us what that photo, the very first photograph that you begin the book with?
Absolutely. And I have to say, I love people not knowing what something is, because in my photography in general, I'm always looking for the, what I call the more that gives a layer of metaphor, that gives something beyond, in this case, adamantly not folkloric and not documentary. And now picture yourself, these listeners, picture me standing in front of a small tienda, looking, a grocery store, I might add, looking into the window and seeing these objects that were hanging from a rope. But in the photograph itself, all you see are these objects. You're seeing very beautiful, to me at least, ovals, one on top of another, that were shining with a kind of gold quality, gold. And then to the one side of that, there's another one of these that is so beautifully round that it made me think of paintings, rather specifically of the roundness of the apples that Cézanne painted. Still didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. So here goes. This is what Alberto told me, and I will tell you because the very last line sounds the chord of the book. Alberto, when I was a little boy in the shower, my grandmother used to scrub me with those. I remember water on the floor. These pads are called estropajos, and they're something that Mexicans have in common. At first, to a child, they're big and hard, but this changes with time. After they're used for a while, they get softer, and their name changes to zacatitos. Now they have become part of our identity. They make us feel a connection to being Mexican. And so what I was seeing related to a painting were indeed scouring pads with these wonderful little tendrils. They look like hair. There's a black background, and these pads take up the entire frame. And so, you know, things can be at least two things at the same time. Mm-hmm. But the chord that was sounded is now they have become part of our identity. They make us feel a connection to being Mexican. Below that, this is true for every page of the book, that is translated into Mexican Spanish. I wanted this book to be available for everybody. And yes, that was kind of a revelation that it could be those things. Shall I go on?
Yes, absolutely.
I'm going to try to describe, but, you know, it's so hard because of this thing of the more. So just know that this picture is actually the Fiesta of San Jose, which is my street. And on the left side is a child. He takes up most of the verticals of the frame. And he is in this wonderful red. He is holding hands with what I assume is his mother. And she has a dress that is special for the fiesta, and it's just gorgeous because color and texture is everything in Mexico. All the way over on the right, sitting on the stoop, you wouldn't know this, it's my stoop, is a much older woman, and on her lap is a very large papier-mâché skull, and she has her hand inside the mouth of the skull.
Yes.
So it's three people of different ages with the child on the left looking across these colors and lights to this old woman, wondering, just wondering. It's a picture of wondering.
Now the skull, of course, our listeners can't see it, but it's a very large skull, and it has a band of purple flowers on its head, kind of like those bands of flowers that you see Frida Kahlo sometimes wearing. And explain to our listeners the significance of a skull, because to most Americans or to non-Mexicans, they would see a skull and they think, gee, this is kind of macabre. But explain to our listeners what Dia de los Muertos and how skulls and skeletons are kind of, if they make candy out of skulls and skeletons, give us a sense of the lightheartedness around skulls and skeletons in Mexican culture versus the somewhat macabre significance that they might have here in the United States.
Well, with pleasure. It's most associated with Day of the Dead, that time in early November when there is a moment that the dead overnight come back. In order to entice them to come back, families will have these little sugar sculptures, often of skulls. They are things that say, we are here all together. the dead and the living can dance together. And here is what Alberto says of a picture that has a skull in it. We all know what a skull represents. It's part of the connection with one another. We respect the skull. It's like a mirror from the dead saying, you too will die, but don't be afraid. Mm-hmm. My son knows that the dead are always with us. And that, I think, expresses a familiarity and an intimacy with death and the skull that we don't have in the United States.
Very well put. And it's almost as though parents of this little boy dressed in red in his red costume are sort of introducing him to be familiar with and not afraid of some of the symbols of death, because death and life, it's all part of one continuum. But Janet, go on. I know there are, I'm certainly excited to look at these photographs once again. So tell us about the next one.
The next one is one that you chose, and I almost didn't choose because I was afraid that it might be what I say folkloric, the cliche of Mexico. And I did not want that. And in point of fact, I will tell you why I chose it. It is a very, the picture takes up two-thirds of the page, yes, and it's what they call a full bleed. It goes to the very top and to the very sides. And it is a man who I saw at a dance wearing a mask. That doesn't begin to describe it. The mask is, first of all, a large array of yellow, green, and indigo blue feathers, yes, completely around him. But that wouldn't be enough. Those feathers are embedded in a piece of metal on his forehead. Yes. And above that is a large crocodile jaw.
Yes.
And that crocodile jaw comes down over his forehead and all the way down to a kind of set of designs, but it is a ferocious crocodile. And
now tell our listeners, this crocodile head, this is like a stuffed taxidermed, it was once alive, right?
I don't know.
It looks like
I don't know. It certainly looks like it, and it's certainly a reasonable, if one can use that word, assumption. But the thing that's very striking about this photograph is that all you can see of the man with this large mask surrounding him, a little bit of his chin, but most importantly, his eye.
Yes.
And he is looking at me. He's not looking at me in a friendly way.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
He's somewhat skeptical. As well he might be. Remember the title, Looking at Mexico. Mexico looks back.
Yes.
And so this is his Mexico looking skeptically at this woman taking a picture. And again, this is the, I'm going to read a bit of, well, actually all of this short commentary by Alberto. This man is not a warrior. He is a dancer. Maybe during the day he's a taxi driver. But when he wears this mask, the crocodile talks through him. This gives him power. And I love that commentary because it's not saying, oh, Mexico, they have conch dancers with crocodiles on their head. No, it's really saying that the everyday can be transcended, and it can be transcended in a way that's very important to people who perhaps do not feel themselves to have power. That's not everybody in Mexico. It's quite a few people in Mexico. So he puts on this mask, not because it's folklore, but because it gives him something he needs. And he looked at me, and that's the picture.
It's beautifully done. And of course, what to me, what this picture says, in addition to the bright colors and what have you, it also says he's trying to capture some of the ferocity of a crocodile by having this,
yes,
crocodile head on his head. And while he might be a taxi driver during the day, when you look at his eye and you look at that crocodile head on his head, this is a man to be reckoned with. He wants you to know that I may be a taxi driver by day, but don't mess with me. That's the message I get from that look.
Well, that's a wonderful interpretation. I'm not sure it's one that I thought. I hope anybody who's listening gets to see this book, because these descriptions of a photograph are very adequate, and there's so much more power and layers and everything, and you just heard one such layer. I'm going to move a little ahead to a photograph of cacti, and it's early in the morning, and there are three of them, and anybody who looks at this photograph says, oh my God, it looks like a Monet, like an impressionist painting. It's beautiful. It's soft lavenders. There's a kind of halo backlit around the cacti. However, again, this is what was said about them by Alberto. These cacti are old, perhaps more than 90 years. They're very important for Mexico, especially to this region. This plant can live in very hot and very cold places. It doesn't need too much water. It doesn't need a lot of good land. It can live anywhere, even if there's only a small place for them. Mexicans feel a connection with this plant. We want to be like it, strong in heart conditions, knowing how to survive.
You know, so, with your
once again, it's the doubleness, the layers of everything. It can be an impressionist painting, and it can be a parable, an image, a metaphor of survival. And I love that. What were you about to say?
Well, I was going to say, I think the Monet, I can see the Monet touches. I can see the lavenders. I can see the pale purples, and also the orange reddishness of the glow on top of the cactus. You're absolutely right. Right. There's something very appealing about these large, stubby cactus that sit out there in the desert with little to no water, and that during the daytime, the temperature might go up to 125 degrees. At night, it might drop below freezing. But they stubbornly sit there. They exist, and they're healthy. And it's almost as though they're saying to the world, we are survivors. And you're right. That's something that Mexicans, I think, that's part of the Mexican spirit, I think, that come hell or high water, we're going to survive. You see that in that depiction of the cactus. Of course, we have many cactus here in California, Southern California. But that particular photograph, I think, does capture part of the essence of the Mexican spirit, I think. Very well chosen.
Boy, you're really good, Jim. And the notion of the fierceness of the man before and the stubbornness of the cacti, you're onto something.
Well, I'll tell you.
It's there. Yeah. That's what a picture can do.
Well, exactly.
That's what a photograph can do.
And that's what I want our listeners, that's what I want to convey to our listeners. You know, unfortunately, our listeners don't have the benefit of having this beautiful book in front of them. You and I have. We're looking at these images, and our listeners must, I hope our listeners pick up on the inspiration and the inspiration because of the beauty of these photographs. That,
well, you know, the book, I wanted it to be a beautiful book, and the designers were wonderful, and the paper is drop-dead gorgeous. I mean, this morning I was sitting with someone, and she couldn't take her hands off the paper, and the way that the images work on the page, and it's big. It's bigger than my other books. My other books were sort of regular size big books, but I had this funny feeling, this has not been done before.
Yes.
This crossing the border in collaboration. And I wanted the book to say, notice me, I'm something new in the world. And so everything about it, even the typeface, I worked on quite a bit to make it as large as it is. This is not, for anyone listening, it's not large, 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 but it's rather a friendly book.
Most definitely. Let's move on to the next one, Janet.
Okay, well, I'm not going to describe this one. I'm only going to say what the last line of one picture, because I like it. Each picture we have looked at and looked again and more deeply becomes more of a mystery. I love that. Okay, now I'm going to one that I will describe. It is a tree. It's probably about two-thirds of the way up of a medium-sized tree. So it's branching out. The branches pretty much fill the frame. And way up high in the tree sits a bicycle.
Yes.
What is a bicycle doing? I mean, it's not like you can pick it up and ride it, you know? I still don't know why it's there, but what it made me think about is how odd things belong together in Mexico. And it's sort of against the tradition of so much photography, all of which is beautiful, but where it's about isolating. And here, I think this picture, which has many other things in it, although the bicycle and the tree really does call attention to itself, it's also saying we're not going to isolate. We're going to put things in the frame that shouldn't belong together, and in life that may not belong together. Maybe there's not enough room in the house, mm-hmm. but somehow they are all in the frame together, not isolated. I find that quite moving. I don't know if anyone listening can see the picture because it's got beautiful yellows and reds in it and everywhere, all of the pictures. The texture is quite ravishing, but just picture a tree with high branches and a white bicycle.
Yes. You know, as I'm looking at this photograph, I'm thinking to myself, you're absolutely right. You have this tree, a medium-sized tree, and then a bicycle and its wheels, etc., right in the middle of the tree, stuck up high in the middle of the tree. And, you know, it does say something about, from time to time in Mexico, you do see what to an American eye might appear to be chaos, but to a Mexican idea, it's not really offensive. It's
to the contrary.
To the American eye, something like this might be offensive because it represents quote unquote chaos, but not to the Mexican eye. And even though we share this long border with Mexico here in the United States, we have many Mexican Americans who live here in the United States, we often don't take the time to realize how different our cultures are. And to celebrate that difference. And this photograph, I think, is a good encapsulation of how sometimes a Mexican can see a situation and interpret it very differently from a classic American perspective.
Another way a classic American perspective might see this photograph is, oh, that's surreal. Mexico is surreal.
Yes.
Because we're primed to see that. We know that. We've learned about that in our history. But that's not what this is about. Not at all. This is about a sense of companionability, even when it is not entirely rational. And as you put it quite rightly, the rational becomes everyday. Irrational becomes everyday.
Absolutely. And of course, in a sense, that's part of the appeal of Mexico. I mean, Mexico, on the one hand, is a country of 125 million people, an economic power, biggest trading partner of the United States on the one hand. But on the other hand, there are aspects of Mexican culture that is encapsulated in this photograph that go beyond that first world developed kind of economy and harkens back to a world that still exists in Mexico.
Absolutely. And you know, some people, I will say this for those people who've heard of San Miguel de Allende because it's very popular. Condé Nast called it the best small city in the world. And so I think people think of it perhaps as somewhat Americanized. And of course, there are areas that are like that. Not where I live. What you're looking at in this picture is the callejón, the alley, that shares a wall with my house. And having lived in this neighborhood both full-time and before part-time, I could go on, and won't, we don't have time, at great length about the wonders of being inside this culture that has It has embraced us, for which we are eternally grateful.
I so envy you as I sit here in San Francisco on a gray, rainy day, and there you are, you and your husband in San Miguel de Allende. You can look out of the window at the back of your house and see this tree with the bicycle in it. So I'm very envious, very envious. Well, Janet, we have time for one more photograph here.
Well, that's good, because there only is one more that I want to talk about, that I have a little, you know, what do you call it? thing pressed onto it. It's a square. Most of the pictures are not square.
Yes.
In the center of it, taking up almost the entire square, is the rim of a window, a round window, which one often sees in Mexico in these old adobe homes. The background is dark. The rim is, it looks like irregular cement. I love irregularity. I mean, imperfection is what one gets in Mexico, and one embraces it. Then you see the kind of tunnel-like aspect of the adobe as the window goes through it. And then there's an ellipse at the very end, a beautiful shape, where you see very softly, almost like an etching, the green trees beyond. And here is something that both Alberto and I wrote together. And it's a wonderful thing, I think, for us to, I don't know if we're going to close finally, but here it goes. Like a telescope, this window is another portal. The moment of a photograph is the moment to open your heart. This is an image at the end. It is also an image of return. Now you go through the portal. The child, me, in the shower being scrubbed, that is you too.
And of course, that he began with the very first photograph talking about, as a child, his grandmother giving him a shower using that round scouring pad, if you will, natural. And then he brings it back almost on the very last page to remind us for that beginning. We're now at the end here. So you have in the beginning and the end, and the ending is promising, because you're looking out to green, to growth, to trees, to life.
And to inclusion, because I'm saying there, you too, you, the listeners, anyone who's looking at this book, you are part of this. Do I have time to talk just a little bit about the coda, read a little bit from it?
Of course.
That image?
Of course,
okay.
If you would.
Because this is, for me, was a very interesting issue. It's for anybody who thinks about sequencing. And I took those pushpins photos, I moved them around, I could try out different sequences, I could look at them on iPhoto, but there's a larger question. What is the arc of this book? What is its story? Not a linear narrative, because that's not something I do. And then I talk a little bit about how I want images to kind of make leaps. Mm-hmm. But then the question is, what are those leaps implying? When they're all together, image after image, what is the story of the book? And here's the last paragraph. I came up with something I thought was banal, but it's a book about life and death. Well, what else is new? Mm-hmm. I asked myself. Isn't everything about life and death, in Mexico especially? We talked, of course, about the skeleton. Mm-hmm. I started thinking of a prism with different facets. In my mind, I was turning the prism, this facet, that facet. The book starts with the image of the scouring pads, mm-hmm. the estropajos, with the memory of being a child, with the personal, and also with an object that binds together many Mexicans. I think this is true for all of my images in this book. By the time we reach the end as now, I hope that we have turned the prism to come back to the beginning with new eyes, attuned to the multidimensionality of all that exists. So I found my way not to a story qua story. You know, this is a book about, in fact, I'm not very good at about, because about limits so many things. Well, it's about this. Well, it's about that. No, but I found my way to what it is that I want the book in its entirety to speak of, not about, to speak of.
Well, Janet, I think you've captured that without question in this book. It's the photographs are engaging. The commentaries bring you into a dimension of the photograph that if you didn't see that dimension at first, Alberto sort of steers you in that direction, in addition to whatever other interpretation you may have of the photograph. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's a book which is, it's inspirational. It's something that you can pick up. You can lose yourself in it. You can lose yourself in the imagery. You can also lose yourself yourself in Mexico and the Mexican culture, which, of course, living there in San Miguel de Allende, you're kind of the epicenter, one of the cultural epicenters of Mexico. And that inspiration comes across very much so in this book.
That's wonderful. You know what I think? I think this is almost an invitation. It
yes.
could even be seen as a template for crossing borders. And other people can collaborate and cross borders.
Very definitely. I mean, the reason that I cited your other book, the last book that we reviewed on this show, I'm Walking in Los, of course, it was in Los Angeles, to go from the kind of the hard-edged urban LA cityscape that you presented there. And of course, it has its beautiful moments too, and its beautiful vistas. But to then jump into Mexico, into the heart of Mexico, the cultural heart of Mexico, it's almost like jumping into the deep end of a very warm and welcoming pool that absorbs you and you don't want to get out of it. Well, Janet, in the remaining few minutes of the podcast, what are your closing thoughts for our listeners?
Oh, I may just have said them, that we're living in a time, and this is a cliche, of such division and also so much artificiality, mm-hmm. AI, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not myself against any of those things, a little bit against the aspect of AI that subverts truth so easily. But this is a book without manipulation. Mm-hmm. It is a book with joy. I discovered when I first started taking photographs that I had what I think of, and anybody who's a little older will understand, the furrowed brow, the two lines of worry above the nose that indicate acute concentration. Mm-hmm. I'm still writing and always will. It's part of me. But then I realized that there is another aspect to creation, and it is exactly what you are talking about. This book is a book of joy, of response, of reciprocity. And yes, that's, I think, something that makes division and AI and untruths kind of unimportant.
I'm sitting here in San Francisco, and of course, we are the capital of AI. 15 of the largest 18 mm-hmm. AI companies are located here. And as you very aptly just said, there's nothing artificial in these 90 images that you've presented to us. Even if there's the backdrop of a car or some technology of the last century, the 20th century, that the image of the car is somehow muted by the fact that there's a boot on top of the car, or there's something or a bicycle in a tree. That there's nothing artificial in these 90 photographs. And in today's world, which is increasingly more artificial, more tech-driven, this book kind of brings us back to our roots. And in a sense, Mexico is sort of all of our roots, in a sense, because the lack of artificiality that you've presented with these 90 photographs, I would commend to everyone. It's almost a meditation, if you will.
Yes, that's a very good word, a word I love. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Should I tell people where they can get the book that kind of thing?
If you would, because I would love to hear, I would love our listeners to experience what you and I have been able to experience in our conversation this afternoon. Please tell them where they can get it.
Okay. First of all, it has not been published in the United States yet. It has been published in Europe. And there is on my publisher's website a picture of the book. You just go to the publisher's website, which I will say in a minute, and you just type in the query, looking at Mexico, Mexico looks back, and you will see a place where you can order the book. That said, all the books of this publisher are now being shipped to the United States, well, actually mid-February, and will go to the distributor and go into bookstores and be available on Amazon, I would say mid-March. Mm. So the only things you need to know are spelling things. They are as follows. The publisher is called Distance. It's the word distance, except a little different. D-I-S-T-A-N-Z at the end. end. Mm-hmm. And then there is the word in German for publisher, and that is Verlag, V-E-R-L-A-G. Now, when you go looking for it, and I hope you do on Amazon, here's another spelling thing that drives me nuts. My last name is Sternberg, and it is spelled, the last whatever part of it, B-U-R-G.
Yes.
And people always misspell it. They go to another Janet Sternberg, who I'm sure is wonderful. She's a swamp biologist. That's not me. So, just so you know, Sternberg, B-U-R-G.
B-U-R-G.
And now you know everything. Now you know everything.
S-T-E-R-N-B-U-R-G. And incidentally, Janet, I visited Amazon, and if you type in the title of the book, Looking at Mexico, Mexico Looks Back, you'll actually see there's, it pops up right on Amazon, even though you're not able to purchase it right now. It does pop up so that for our listeners, they can simply, if they don't go to the publisher's website, they can go to the Amazon website and probably order it for when it is available in March. But it will.
Yeah, no, they don't have a pre-order on it, which is very distressing to me. We won't talk about that. We will say you can simply, and I suppose this is a pun, bookmark that page and return to it, and you will find it ready to be ordered one of these days soon.
Absolutely. And Janet, how can our listeners follow you? Website, an X handle, LinkedIn, anything like that?
Oh, sure. Well, I do have two websites. One is for photography, and we'll just skip the www stuff because, you know, everyone knows that.
Sure.
Dot. And then the photography one is Janet Sternberg Photo. I'm sorry, is it photo or photography? Ooh, I should know this. Janet Sternberg Photography. Whoever's listening, not that hard to find. Let's try JanetSternbergPhoto.com.
Okay.
And if it's not there, then it's photography. And it's a very rich website. I'm not sure how beautiful it is. There's a lot of great images in it. But there's a lot of stuff that's been written about my work. There's stuff I've written about photography. There's sections on different shows. So that's kind of a good thing. The other one is much simpler, www.JanetSternberg.com, and that is my books, and that's an old website, and not my monographs, not my photography monographs, but mm-hmm. my literary books. And so that's another way to find out about the books I've written or edited, whatever. And I do have an Instagram account that I really enjoy using. I think of it as like a sketchbook. I only put in relatively new images, and I wait to see what I think of them, what other people think of them. So that's another way to find me.
Uh-huh. Are you on X at all?
I am not.
Okay. Well, we will leave it at that. I think Instagram, and then, of course, the two websites. And again, spelling of the last name is, it's Janet, S-T-E-R-N-B-U-R-G, listeners.
Marvelous. And then also just Google me, because, you know, there's stuff about the different books. And, you know, it's kind of fun once in a while to look at yourself and go, oh, well, there's that. So,
well, Janet, it's been an absolute delight talking with you again today, and it sounds as though you have taken to San Miguel de Allende like a duck to water. Thoroughly enjoyed your personal interpretation of your photographs. I mean, that's a real gift and a treat to have the actual creator of those photographs interpret them for me, for our listeners, more importantly. And again, I want to thank you for joining us and look forward to the next time.
I will look forward to that too. And thank you for your perceptions. They're terrific.
Thank you, Janet. And for our listeners, today's episode is number 493. Listen to us on Apple Podcast, Spotify, Pandora, 18 platforms with listeners in 60 countries. FeedSpot has recognized us as a top 25 California news podcast. This has been the San Francisco Experience with Jim Herlihy, coming to you from San Francisco.